So I was just going to begin by asking really, you did your undergraduate in Cambridge. How did you end up coming to Birmingham in 1970?
Well, I did a... scroll back a little bit, you always need a little bit of history. I brought up on a council estate, but when you say the council estate was in Epsom in Surrey, it rather destroys the real edge of the story. Nevertheless, you know, I came from a reasonably, you know, lower middle class, working class background. My father was a mental nurse, and my mother did office work and stuff, and they both, you know, left school at 15 and whatever. But anyway, but I'd got, as you did in the 50s, you know, I'd got an 11 plus scholarship to a day public school in Wimbledon. So by the time I kind of got to, you know, the university level, I was already kind of quite acculturated into, you know, that kind of thing, in a sense in which I went to Cambridge, you know, as somebody from a poorer background, but not one of those really kind of gritty... Well, I had a friend who was at Cambridge, who came from Carlisle, whose father was a train engineering works or something. I mean, it wasn't quite like that, but reading English had a bit of an edge, and the master at the school that I've been at was a big Leaverside. So there was this sense, even though, you know, he wasn't at all left-wing in any sense, at all, nevertheless, there was something about literature as something that commented on society and the rest of it. So turning up at Cambridge in 1967, you know, knowing Raymond Williams was there already, being in that kind of, well, we're going to study literature, but we kind of relate it to society and stuff like that. And also, while I was there in my final year, I started going to a seminar that Stephen Heath was running on semiotics. He'd just come back from Paris working Roland Barthes. This was extremely new at that time. In fact, I signed up the seminar, I didn't know what it was. So I had a kind of interest in sort of Raymond Williams type stuff and semiotics. And when I went to see the careers guy in Cambridge, and he said, what are you going to do? And we chatted for a bit, and eventually said, well, I thought I might do postgraduate. And he said, yes, brilliant, go and do that, because he couldn't find any job for me to do. So I thought, well, I might as well do that. And I was looking around and saw in the, I think I said to you earlier before we put the tape on, I mean, there was the university faculty library in the Sidgwick site there was a poster there for the centre, which I didn't know anything about.
This one.
It's not the one that's in there, but that's that kind of a thing, you know, that kind of a poster. And I thought, oh, that was interesting. So I wrote off and got sent some stuff, like some of the earlier reports and probably some of the stuff I've passed you, some of those working papers probably. And I thought, this is really interesting. I didn't have a topic or anything. But in those days, you could get... I'd got a first class marks in my year two at Cambridge. In those days... It was easier to get a grant to do postgraduate work without really saying what you were going to do. We just did it on the basis that you know, you were good. So I applied to... I'm trying to think. I'm not sure it was Department of Education Science or the British Academy in those days. Anyway, whichever one it was. And I got... They said, potentially, you can have this grant. And so I went up in the Easter and I wrote off to Birmingham and said, you know... And they invited me up around Easter time for an interview, which I took the train up from Cambridge to Birmingham. As I was saying earlier, I kind of got all dressed up, and these three guys in bush jackets, Richard Dyer, Trevor, and Stuart Hall, interviewed me. And he said, you can come. So I turned up there in, you know, Birmingham, which I'd never been to Birmingham before as a city, other than the interview. I got married in the summer as well. That's, you know, that's a different narrative, really. So anyway, we turned up in Birmingham, and I didn't really, I don't quite remember when I settled on the PhD topic, actually. It must have been quite early. I think originally I wanted to do something on science fiction, but I didn't have any topic. But I fixed on the topic quite quickly, and I think I was the first person there who wasn't supervised by Stuart. In fact, Michael was my main supervisor, which is fine. And found it was an extraordinarily interesting place to be, because there was all these different people with all these different ideas and all these different places, and the ideas, which to some extent had emerged in the late 60s out of the student movement about, you know, students should have more control over their curriculum and all that stuff, but really instantiated as a kind of major principle of the operation. So off we went, and we went straight into the reader seminars and my thesis. And
what was it like? Can you give us a bit of context around these, like 1970, 71? I know you may have joined, I don't know, right in the middle of these debates, but what was the
context? Well, I think it seemed to me that the debates really were moving into a particular political and theoretical phase, which they'd just been kind of dancing around before. Partly that was to do, I think, with, you know, Richard going to Paris and Stuart taking over. Although I think it was also about that time. I mean, I think Richard Hoggart probably went to Paris because he realised that, you know, what he'd set going was good, but it wasn't really him anymore. So I think, there was a sense that the reader debates were actually where they were saying, we are now going to ground what we're doing in some serious theory, and we're going to give ourselves the weapons to engage with the sociologists and engage with, you know, anybody else and outthink them and out-argue them if we needed to. So we really needed to know our stuff. We needed to know, you know, the sociology, we needed to know the French theorists, we needed to know the ethno-methodologists, we needed to know all this stuff in order to, rather than being seen as kind of lightweight froth on the surface, to be seen as a kind of, you know, grounded, serious intellectual enterprise. And that was quite divisive, that was contentious, because there were some people who said, because actually it also meant that people said, well, we should be studying topics that are serious. And people like Richard Dyer, we were saying, well, no, I think we should be studying the monarchy and entertainment, stuff like that. And even Chaz saying we should be studying football. There was a sense in which somehow we should be studying things that were manifestly serious. Although,
is that humanism, the kind of humanism versus kind of theoreticism?
Yeah, it's kind of that. It's kind of that. And it's sort of humanism or empiricism, yeah. So it was a... And there was a sense, you know, that if you're studying media, you probably should study the news, not, you know, I mean, I remember Richard, one of his early articles in the Working Papers was a thing on Tom Jones, you know, which was, you know, really interesting, I think. But there was a kind of sense, well, if the centre was studying Tom Jones and the monarchy, people would say, what's this all about? You know, is this serious? What's happening? And even though part of the point of going into it was to say that popular stuff could be serious, there was a kind of real dilemma. There was a reaction against, I think, the sort of popular art. If you take that book of Stuart Hall and Paddy Wonnell from 64, you know, that kind of a book wouldn't have got written in the early 70s by the people in the centre, because it would have seemed too much just dabbling in popular culture. I mean, there were different views.
Like too lightweight almost.
Kind of, yeah. People were doing different things. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on there. I mean, you know, it's like all these things when people say, oh, you know, the Birmingham School, and you think when you were there, and there's just so many different things going on.
How fragmentary was it in this period?
Well, I suppose, I don't know about fragmentary. I mean, I think that because people had the sense they wanted to argue about the same thing, in a sense, it brought you together. You felt there was something you were trying to argue about that was, you know, mattered, that you shared, even if you often debated what it was. So the people at the margins were more people like Chris Bergson, who just thought, you know, forgive this language, a load of intellectual wankers, you know, and I'm just going to kind of hang out, you know, celebrate rock music or whatever, or because he refers in there to Chandler Brossard, who was there, I think, and he was visiting from America, who was, of course, somebody from the Beat Generation in the States. You know, so there was that kind of sense of what is the ambience of the place. So there were lots of different things going on, and more came later, because in the first year I was there, there was hardly any feminist thought going on. There were a few women there, but even the work they were doing, it wasn't until the second year that some more people came in, like Marina Camargo and others, Janice.
Did feminism then become more...
Well, it started to become a bit of an issue. I think it wasn't really till I left that things cut out a bit rough, I think. But it was beginning to be more of a kind of you know, people were saying, well, this still feels very male dominated, you know, but that was just the beginning. I think it didn't really blow up till the year or two after I've gone.
What about like politics in the centre? Because you know, I was reading that paper that Stuart wrote called The Missed Moment. I mean, one of the things he was saying, it was, you know, we're not political enough. We need to connect the politics we're doing outside to what we're doing inside.
I think that was tricky, because I think most people who were there had, in one way or another, you know, a political affiliation of a, you know, of a left-ish kind, one way or the other. I mean, probably all, but most. Not everybody had the same view about how you connected the politics and intellectual work, and some of that was about degrees of political commitment, maybe, and some of it was maybe just about how they tried to separate those things. And I mean, I haven't reread that. I was thinking of rereading some of this stuff, so I don't know. You're going to digitalise all this stuff eventually,
if we get the time, because
I was going to reread some of that stuff, and because thinking about the point you raised, which is, because I remember, after being there a while, and Stuart wrote one of these papers, and I thought, I read it, and I thought, well, are we being told off? Because I was still quite new. And what's the context of what's being said? And I suppose looking back now, I think, although it was probably easier to survive then than it is now, we were probably working at the limits of what the institution would allow, I would have thought then, you know. And if the thing had got more political as a enterprise, I think, in an explicit way, I think, you know, arguably it would have shut down sooner. So I don't know what Stuart would say about that, he probably doesn't want to bother with all that now, but it seemed to me pretty pragmatically that probably he was demanding more than was possible. Now, maybe because I was on the side of the people who are being criticised rather than the kind of gung-ho people. But it was a very live issue. It was a very live issue operationally, in terms of people's commitment, in terms of the work you were trying to do. And, you know, everybody was engaged in that discussion one way or another. And some people obviously said, well, my political work is done through this intellectual work, which will change minds in this way. And people would say, well, we connect this to, you know, running 40 Hall Road or writing the Free Press or doing other sorts of things, you know. So it was, you know, it was about the different positions, as I say, were different, but they were articulated around some common sense of purpose. Otherwise, there'd be nothing to be different
which
about.
Which was cultural studies.
And the notion of cultural studies was an intervention, both in its content and its ways of working, that was needed to, you know, explain what was happening in contemporary life, was needed to change ways of working in higher education and elsewhere, and, you know, was needed to influence things elsewhere.
Well, how did the collective approach work in practice?
Well, I think it was very important because, you know, especially in humanities and social sciences, then, less so now, but the collective notion now is done often in a different way. That the notion of saying going in and this is work we are doing together and it's collectively owned. You had your own thesis to do and all that, but the other work was, so trying to break with the notion of some of this work as being, you know, your individual thing you were doing rather than part of a collective enterprise. So what you were doing related to what other people are doing, or maybe you were just, you're working together on something. So it actually was an attempt to change the mindset. And for me, that was profoundly important. You know, it was new. It was different. It was transformative to be asked to think like that seriously and push it through. So you'd sit down and say, okay, we're going to talk together about what we do and who's going to do this and who's going to do that. And decisions will be made collectively and there'll be, you know, there will be discussions about who's not pulling their weight and all this kind of stuff. And I don't think now, even where you have perhaps more collective work in humanities and social sciences than you had then, generally, it's not necessarily conceived of in that way. It's more, you know, kind of, well, we're an operational group and we'll get things done. But you know, that's like kind of any organisation. Mm. This was some notion of collective purpose that you bought into and debated and formed, and was as far as it could be democratic. So that was profound, I think. And profoundly important. Yeah, of course it didn't achieve everything we wanted it to.
What did Stuart Hall kind of, how did he kind of like deal with the, because you said you...
Well, I think it's extraordinarily difficult as well, because on the one hand, you know, I think he had to operate within the organisation of the university, and for most of us, we didn't see enough of that to realise, as I do now, what an incredible strain it must have been to have had to keep the space open against all kinds of financial and other issues, you know, just the normal issues in a way, to do all that, but at the same, and to take the responsibility of running the place, but at the same time try to engender a sense of collective work within it, when at the same time, you know, being the most exceptional mind, like I said, I've ever met, you know, ever, bar none since then. And, you know, in that sense, there was this dilemma, you know, here was Stuart, who clearly knew more than the rest of us, was, you know, brilliantly intelligent, perceptive, you know, just was there. And you had all the time to say, but he must not be seen as, you know, a kind of divine leader. And I don't think people didn't, but to live that out, I suspect in the end, where he left for the OU, he just burnt him out, I should imagine. I haven't really talked to him about that. You know, after 10 years of that, maybe went to the OU, probably just the point, well, you know, it's time, so you've done all you can in one place, but I think he's probably thought, this can't go on, you know. An extraordinary achievement.
Did it ever get competitive, like, in terms of the project, you know, like, was there sort of jostling for positions and that kind of thing going on?
Not really, no. I mean, I think, no, I don't think in that sense. I think people were... No, I think people were interested in what other people were doing. And, you know, I mean, I noted one thing in there where somebody was saying, well, all those people have got grants, are able to do this and we're not. But that was rare. And I don't think... It wasn't really individually competitive in that sense. I mean, there was a lot of arguing and a lot of mutual criticism and occasionally a bits of bad feeling, but it wasn't so much, it was just genuinely thinking that you were right and the other person was wrong. It wasn't so much kind of thinking there was some special place in the hierarchy you needed to be, actually. No, I don't think.
Just finally, because I know you're busy, I want to ask about your reflections about like the extent to which, I mean, higher education has obviously gone through incredible changes since that period. You know, how could something like that ever be created in the contemporary context?
Well, I think, what that was an intervention in a particular historical moment, which, you know, I think, well, it's necessary, it's the wrong word, but I mean, was created out of that moment and responded to things that were going on at that moment, you know. Let me say what I mean by that. There obviously were sets of things going on in the world that the contemporary disciplines couldn't really explain or come to grips with. And there were also things about trying to reconceptualise what certain kinds of research and university work might be for, or to at least revive them. I mean, you wouldn't do that again, because you don't, in that form, because you don't need to do it now. It's been done.
Mm.
And in a sense, for better or worse, a lot of those areas of work that were developed there, and in other places too, but, you know, are now widespread everywhere.
Across the disciplines.
Which is good, you know. And the fact that people are doing all sorts of things under the names of cultural studies I don't much like doesn't worry me all that much, in the sense in which there's also a lot going on. So in a way, the centre performed its historical mission. In a way, it was right that it's not there anymore, frankly. You know, I mean, obviously, the way things happened is one thing. However, the lessons I learned from that are, one, there is a place for interventions of a radical kind in universities that deal with specific situations and needs to move things on and which require new and different ways of working. We've got one here, which is in some ways completely different in our community university partnership work, which I'm very committed to and will probably carry on working on a bit after I retire. For me, that's the equivalent of the centre, not because it looks anything like it, but because it's about saying, at this historical moment, there's new kinds of interventions needed. We need to stretch the sense of the institution. We need to connect externality issues. So the work I'm talking about is very much to do with the distribution of university knowledge into community groups and social enterprises and stuff like that. So it's a particular kind of way of restructuring how we think about university, as far as I'm concerned. Mm. And I learnt a lot from the centre, I think, including about ideas of collaborative work, including being prepared to think in new ways, including how you work within certain sorts of institutions to deliver radical things. And there are probably lots of other examples around, or could be, of things like that, interventions, I would call it, of the kind the centre was in whatever it is that's needed now. You wouldn't do this again because, you know, we're not at the stage where television's just emerged and, you know, we've just come out of the Second World War and affluence is with us and all that stuff. I mean, you know, but there are different historical moments, and I think
the conjuncture, different
conjuncture, exactly, right. and what kind of intellectual coalition you put together and on what terms to do things is a judgment I think people should make. So the lesson I would take from this is, you know, is how you identify, respond, develop something in that conjuncture, live it through, how people work together sometimes, patterns of working together, and, you know, go through all those questions about how do you communicate what you're doing, in what form and what way and to what audience and all that stuff. So if anybody can ever write the full history of the centre, because I haven't seen anything at the moment when anybody who's in something never thinks people can write about it. But I haven't seen any serious attempts to do it, really. I mean, there's one or two silly books by one or two idiots. But, really silly. I don't mean... I may have missed some good stuff, so I'm not...
Mm.
But, I mean, I think there probably is something about, you know, that... those ways of working and those sorts of debates and those kinds of coalitions of interests and what they released. I suspect in these things, particularly some stuff Stuart wrote, it hasn't really been mined, is some really rich stuff
really rich
about, stuff. You know, different kinds of issues of linking politics and intellectual work and all sorts of things. Mm. So if anybody's got time to dig around in it, great.
Well, thank
I'd love to read it.
Thank you very much for your time.